Morning, everyone. Greetings in Jesus' name this morning. It's good to be here this morning. It's good to be here this morning and to worship with you all. Klaus mentioned this is kind of our last time as worshiping a small group for a while. And it's a little extra small even today. It's good to be here. I love when Bible school comes, but it's also kind of just precious sometimes to be here with the people we all know. And so I don't know how to say that exactly, because I do really enjoy seeing the Bible school all come together, and I enjoy all the speakers that come, and I enjoy all the things that Bible school brings to us. But it's nice to be sometimes with all the people you know and just all the familiar part of worshiping as a smaller group. This morning for a message, I was thinking a little bit along the line of the end of the year. And at the end of the year, whether you're self-employed or an employee or whatever, you tend to do some last year, the end of the year things, whether it's your taxes, it's kind of a dividing line. And we kind of take an account where we are financially. And we finish up the year, do our paperwork, and perhaps some people do it sooner than later. Some people probably wait to the last minute in April. But for all practical purposes, we do a lot of end-of-year work. We call it taking account. We do our accounting at the end of the year. And the Bible tells us to take account of our lives also. And perhaps the end of the year, something about it, just, you know, you think over the last year, you receive letters from other people who wrote about their year in the past, and you think more about, you know, what went on this year. And I think that's a good thing. We are to take account. And my title is We Shall Give Account. Someday we're going to stand before God and we shall all give account of our lives. And not just the last year, but all of our lives. And it can be a sobering thing, and it should be a sobering thing. 1 Peter 4:5 was one verse I thought of. When you look up, there's different places. And we're going to just kind of skip through the Bible and think about different things. As I was thinking about the sermon, my mind went so many different ways, and I ended up just incorporating a lot of different things into it. It's probably not even all connected. But I think I'll just read the first five verses here. It's a little bit to think about. For as much then as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind. For he that suffered in the flesh hath ceased from sin, that he no longer shall live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lust of men, but to the will of God. For the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lasciviousness, lust, excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries, wherein they think it strange that you run not with them in the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. Who shall give account to him that is ready to judge the quick and the dead? So here we see a little bit of very much of Christian experience today. We see Peter reminding us that for as much then as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind, for he has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. So Peter is reminding us and exhorting us to give up ourselves just as Christ did. And one of the ways we do that is we cease from sin. We no longer live our times, the rest of our time in the flesh, to lust of men. And Jesus was our perfect example in that, and he did not do that. And I think that's why he's comparing it. But he said to the will of God. And he talks about how that in the times past we probably operated in some way just like the people all around us. We thought a lot about ourselves. We had a lot of fun. We just, lasciviousness would have the thought of just if there was a pleasure to indulge ourselves in, we did it. And some people to greater extents than others. And the people around you that are still living that way, they're looking at you and they're saying, well, why not? Why don't you still do this? And he's reminding us of why we don't do it. He says, they think it's strange that you run not with them the same excess of riot, basically just enjoying life. And why don't you? Why don't you do all of these things? Why do you cease from sin? Why do you live this life of, I can't think of the word I wanted to use, but just a life of discipline. Why do you try to follow Jesus and follow his example of ceasing from sin and not indulging ourselves in sin? Well, Peter gives the answer. He says, "Who shall give account to him that is ready to judge the quick and the dead?" And I think he's actually talking about the believers, and of course the unbelievers will also. We shall give account to him that is ready to judge the quick and the dead. And we know that, right? We all know that. And so we live differently because we know that we're going to give an account to God sometime. And I think it's something we should think about a lot. And we tend not to think about it because we're caught up in all that goes on. He says, "For this cause was the gospel preached also to them that are dead, that they might be judged according to men in the flesh, but live according to God in the spirit. But the end of all things is at hand. Be therefore sober and watch under prayer." The end of all things is at hand, and we know what that means. That is when we will all stand together and give account. Well, I think we're going to touch on that a little bit later. There's some, I'm going to go and talk about some things that we will give account for. And some of these things, as I was reading through the Bible and my mind was just drawn in a lot of different directions. Matthew 24. We're going to give account. We're going to give account for the things that God has given to us. And I think I wrote down a wrong passage. I wanted the parable of the talents there when Jesus gave the talents to the people. Okay, it's actually 25 and goes over to 14. And I wanted to think a little bit about this. And we're going to give an account for the things that God has given to us. And here in this, I wasn't sure if we should read all these passages or not. I think we're all fairly familiar with it. And we have this, "For the kingdom of heaven is a man traveling, and he gave 5 talents to one, to another 2, and to another 1. And he was going away, and he gave his talent, he gave talents, or he gave responsibilities to these people. And it may have been in the form of, if you're going away, and you maybe even your possessions, maybe he sold his possessions, and he's going to be away for a number of years, and he gave these people different varying amounts of talents. And I thought about that, how that is God gives us all different things in life. And it's very different for each one of us. And here he gave 5 to one and 2 to one and 1 to another. And I don't know if God really looked at their, he probably did, because it's right for God to do that. He looked at their abilities and he said, you know, I think this one can take, he could be responsible for this much, and I think this one could be responsible for this much, and this one could be responsible for this much. But God has done the same thing to us. He's given us our personality, our abilities, our strengths, our gifts. He's given each of us some talents, and we're responsible for that. And it probably varies a lot. It even makes a difference in how you were born. We can't determine how we were born, but God can, or to what circumstances we're born into. And I know some of this, I wrote down, God gives us our talents, and I'm thinking about our gifts, basically. I should have wrote that word down. But our gifts and just the natural things that were given to us are actually given to us by God. We actually didn't choose that. You could have been born in the Ukraine, and you could be now, your blood could be spilled upon the earth in this war. But God gives us these talents. You could have been a person that you could say just didn't have many talents, was just very disadvantaged socially. You could have been born into a pauper's family, and you were born into a relatively wealthy family. You could have been born in a country where your social standing was nil, and India and so many, many other countries, people are divided up even by their social standing. But God gives each one of us, when we were born, he gives us responsibilities. Just like he gave these people responsibilities, he gave them their talents. And then after a long time, it says he come back and he looked it over and he talked to them. What did you do with your talents? What did you do? And the one that had five, he went out and he gained himself five more talents. He used the things that God had given to him and he gained more. And the one at two's likewise. And the last one he came to, and this person probably had a lot of hard knocks in life, and for some reason he was kind of locked up on this thing, and he knew that God was going to come back. And when God came back, he hadn't done anything with what God gave him. He was perhaps so afraid that he would lose it. I think it's this account here. He dug in the earth and he just hid it there. But God said, "You were lazy." And I think it was probably beyond fear. It was probably beyond all of those things. He said, "I knew you're a hard man." And he goes, "You reap where you have not." None of those were true. None of those things were true. And his Lord said, "Thou wicked and slothful servant." He says, "You, at the very least, you could have put my money out for interest. And you could have gotten a little bit of something." So God wants us to use the talents that he has given to us, and he expects us to. He doesn't expect us to fritter them away or to, I don't know how this person did, but his Lord called him, "Thou wicked and slothful servant." So it appears like he maybe frittered it away. Perhaps he was just lazy. To go out and trade his money would have been work. And I had to go to the marketplace perhaps and do something to make it. But he said, "You're just lazy and slothful. And so he took it from him. And we know the story where he was cast into hell because of his unfaithfulness. 1 Corinthians 4:7 gives us a little bit of a picture to another verse that talks about how responsible we are. But it doesn't really, maybe this is a little bit wrong way to put it, but it says, "For who maketh thee to differ from one another?" And I'm bringing this back to how responsible we are for the talents that God has given to us. And one of the things I wanted to bring out is that none of us chose our talents, but we were all given to them. And 1 Corinthians 4:7, Paul brings this up because it seems like people are being puffed up one against another. In fact, in the previous verse, "Who maketh thee to differ from one another? And what hast thou this not received? Now if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as thou hast not received?" And the point I just wanted to bring out is God has given us talents. There are nothing we can do to receive them. And he expects us to use the talents that we have, whether he's given us great or little, whether he's given us five or one. He expects us to use those talents to bring glory to him and to multiply them and to have something that we are not ashamed of when he comes back and talks to us about it. Eventually, he's going to come back and talk to us about what we've done with the things that he has given to us. God has also made us accountable in many different ways. I wanted to go back over to Matthew 18. And I was thinking about how accountable we are to each other. And God's going to take account of that also. And someday we're going to give account of that also. It's a very familiar story if you go to Matthew 18, 22 to the end of the chapter. "Then is the kingdom of heaven likened to a certain king which would take account of his servants." Notice again here, there's a king taking account of his servants. "And when he had begun to reckon, one was brought to him which owed him 10,000 talents." And this is the one that was forgiven this huge amount of debt. And we don't know what it is today in today's money, but we could say $1 million. And so he was taking account, and he noticed that someone owed him a lot of money. And be a feudal system like this, he could bring his servant in, and he could, it was probably actually a subject living on his land. A lot of the feudal societies, you'd have basically a king, and then you'd have allotments of lands, and he would probably lend money to them to buy cattle or do whatever, maybe plant your seed and whatever. And this person ended up owing him a lot of money. And when he took account, he noticed this, and he brought him in, and he was going to be rather harsh with him. He actually commanded that for him to be sold, his wife and his children, all that he had, in payment to be made. And his servant fell down and worshipped him, saying, "Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay thee all." He begged in such a way that the king said, "That's okay. You're done. It's over." It looks like he didn't even require him to set up a payment plan. It looks like he just forgave him. And this is a pretty sad story. He went out and found one of his fellow servants that owed him 100 pence, and he laid hands on him. And he basically, and this man fell down and begged for mercy the same way, but he cast him in the debtor's prison. And then when the people around there, the other people saw it, they were like, "This is awful." And they went and told the Lord. And he called this man back in and called him back in to give account of what he had done. He said, "I forgave you all your debt." And he said, "Shouldn't you have compassion on your fellow servant, even as I had pity on you?" And his Lord was wroth and delivered him to the tormentors. So here's another story that ends with this wicked servant being destroyed. One of the things, God is going to give us account, I believe, for the way we give mercy to other people. And one of the ways we can learn how to give mercy to other people is actually study God and the way he deals with other people. But there are many ways that we can show mercy. In this situation here, it was in a money situation, to where someone owed him money and had no way to repay. And I think it would have been probably, for the amount of money and the way we understand that, even his wife and his children and all that he had wouldn't have really taken care of the debt. And there are many situations in life where we run into that. I'm not really thinking even primarily in money. But the only way to really free someone from the debt that they have is actually to forgive them when they ask for mercy. And God is asking us to be merciful. And the part I wanted to bring out is God, we are all like this servant. And I think when we realize this, we are all like this servant who have been given forgiveness to such an extent that we can't even imagine it. And God is expecting us then, as we are given that forgiveness, to actually take that and give it to our fellow servants. So God is going to ask us an account of how we have given mercy to other people. And there's even this whole point of fairness here. Or I'm not sure what word we could use for that. Fair. I would just think of a common word of fairness, to where we were given so much, and yet we couldn't even give a little mercy to someone else. We were given mercy on such a scale, and yet we couldn't even give mercy on a wee little scale to someone else. And God called this man into account for this, and he made him responsible. I believe we are responsible to reciprocate the great forgiveness God has given us, and he's going to call us an account. He's going to call us an account for the way we have forgiven other people. And it's interesting, even if you look in the previous verses, on how God actually tells us to deal with other people in this whole forgiveness subject. "Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone, and if he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother." And I thought about that as an extension of mercy, in the fact that God even wants us to clear things up between ourselves in such a way that our brother that offends us isn't even humiliated sometimes. And sometimes we want loud, clear justice so that everybody knows that we've been wrong and everybody knows that it's taken care of. And that's not God actually would rather we do things in a way sometimes so that nobody is humiliated, but everyone. This whole thing can be resolved. And I think that's what God is calling us to do, is to be merciful, to be fair, even in the thought of, I think if we view ourselves properly and how much we've been forgiven, then we can think about that when someone needs forgiven something to us, when we need to forgive someone. It's like, this, we've been forgiven this $1 million, and someone needs forgiven for 100 pence. Someone needs forgiven for just a little bit. And God makes us responsible. He's going to ask an account for us on how we have reciprocated this great forgiveness he has given to us. Matthew 20 is another very interesting, and I've heard many different ways of people looking at this parable here. We have the parable of the kingdom of heaven, and the first verse is like unto a man that is a householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And then maybe this one goes back a little bit, the same idea of the talent. But this is so much how we operate today that I think we can all kind of take a little bit of a, learn something from it. So he goes out in the morning, and he finds these people, and if I understand right, the custom was the laborers would gather in perhaps the village square, and they would wait to be hired out. Well, he goes out in the morning, and he went out early in the morning, perhaps just while it was breaking, the sun was breaking. And he went out to hire laborers. When he agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. Then he went out about 9 o'clock, and he saw others standing idle. And he said, go ye into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right I will give you. And they went their way, and went out about the 6th hour, and the 9th hour did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out. This is like almost quitting time. He went out. And he says, why stand ye here idle? And they said, because no man hath hired us. He said unto them, go ye also into the vineyard, whatsoever is right to you, that shall ye receive. And then at the end, they came together, and here they found out that they were all paid the same thing. And that made quite a little ripple. And they actually brought it up to him. These last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden in the heat of the day. And he answered one of them and said, friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst thou not agree with me for a penny? And he's basically saying, I made the deal with you, and you agreed with it. And I didn't do you any wrong. Take that thine is and go thy way. I thought about that. I know it's kind of an interesting concept. But we are all responsible for God's agreement to us. How do we make sense of all that? I think sometimes we tend to chafe. You know, we all have convictions that God has given to us, and we tend to chafe as we watch other people who don't seem to work as hard as we do. And perhaps even responsibilities God has given to us. Perhaps it's disadvantages God has given to us. And we tend to chafe, and we tend to look around at each other, and we tend to be discontent. Perhaps we've lived a life of self-discipline, and then we watch someone who hasn't, and we watch them rejoice in their salvation. Many different ways, and maybe it comes back to simply the responsibilities God has given to us. God has called us all to different things, and perhaps we look at how hard it is. We looked at how hard we think we've worked for God, and we just can't quite get over it. And I think sometimes those things are even largely imagined, and sometimes they're not always true. But I think sometimes they are actually true, and that people are, sometimes God, it can be anything from poor health, maybe it's the circumstances, going back to even the circumstances that God has given to us. And it just makes our life hard. It really does make our life hard. But God is reminding them that he called them and he was fair with them. And I think God would have us today to not look at each other in so many ways. Sometimes if you feel like you've labored 11 hours, 12 hours, if you feel like you've labored, you feel like you've given up and given up and given up, God is calling us not to look at other people and to be jealous of them. And I think he's actually calling them to just simply be content with the situation God has given to them. He says, is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? Is thine eye evil because I am good? So the last shall be first and the first last, and many be called but few chosen. And that could also be speaking also of God's, the nation of Israel versus the Gentiles being called, which I think it is, but I think it also applies in so many ways with us today. We tend to be content because we think people have advantages over us, or we think that people haven't earned their penny as hard as we have in many things. But the real, but God is going to call us into account for what he has given to us and the circumstances that he is, the circumstances that we have. The other thing I thought of is God has called us to think a little bit, perhaps on another line. In each one of these parables, we see that the man went away and then he came back. Well, this last one here, it was a day. He gave him the responsibility and then he met him at the end of the day and paid him. The other two we see where God went away and then he came back. Well, we live in an era, Jesus is with us all the time. But it still feels sometimes, I believe, like we begin our Christian journey, and then we live our Christian journey, and God brings different circumstances into our life, and God has required us to, he has asked us to be ambassadors for him, he has asked us to do many things for him. And then, someday, we're going to give an account to him. And one of the things I thought of is God has asked us, or one of the things that Paul talks about in 2 Timothy, is he wants, we should live in a way that can, we can be ready to give an account. 2 Timothy 4, 7 to 8. Paul talks about living the Christian life. He compares it to a fight. He says, I've fought a good fight. I've finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness with the Lord, the righteous judge shall give me at that day. Not to me only, but unto all them that love his appearing. God is calling us to be ready to give account. And Paul here, he says, I have fought a good fight, I have finished my course, I have kept the faith. And he by faith looked ahead and he saw a crown of righteousness ahead for him. And I think we need to understand the crown of righteousness by faith. But I like Paul's attitude in many different places to where we're actually ready to give account. We have done the best we can. And we understand that God has, that God is the righteous judge, and that someday we are actually going to come back before him and he's going to judge us. And Paul says, not to me only, and Paul's looking at this as a positive thing. And to not to me only, he's not looking at this in fear. And he says, to all those that love his appearing. And we want to be among those that love his appearing. So we want to be ready. We want to live our lives in such a way. And as we go back through the parables, we see many lessons we can learn from forgiving other people to using the things that God has given to us wisely and in a way that God intended, to the point where we can actually say, I've fought a good fight. I've finished the course. and we can actually look forward to being ready. One of the ways that we can be ready to give account is actually having our sins go before us is another aspect of that, that we can actually look forward with joy to meeting God someday. Paul talks in 1 Timothy 5:24. He said, some men's sins are open beforehand going forward to judgment, and some men follow after. And this is one of the things that you see with the people that rebelled against God, whether it was the man who refused to forgive his servant, or whether it was the man who refused to take his talent and put it to work and go out and be diligent and do something. None of these people were ready when God, when none of these people were ready when God came to give an account of them. We shall all give an account someday. Revelation 20, verse 11, talks about the judgment day. And I know we live in an interesting time. And I think it's a time of deception where we don't think a lot about when we will give account to God. And we'll actually all stand before God. And I thought it was interesting even reading different people's opinion on where we go after we die. And some people believe we go straight to be with the Lord. And there's some parts of the Bible that do talk about that. But there's time and time again we have reference to a resurrection day. And what happens at the resurrection day? Well, if you go to Revelation 20, and some people even say this is just the resurrection. They say that this is the resurrection of the unjust, perhaps. But I think it's a resurrection of all of us. Revelation 20. Someday, everything we do, we're going to give an account for. And that's the point I'm trying to make. And Paul said, I lived in such a way that I'm ready to meet the righteous judge. And I hope we can all say that. But here in Revelation 20, 11, and I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were open, and another book was open, which is the book of life. And notice the books that were open. And the dead were judged out of those things which are written in the books according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged every man according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire, and this is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. And I think it's very important for us to understand that what we do matters. What you do with your talent, what you do with your forgiveness you receive, what you do with the circumstances you were placed in, whether privileged or little, what you do with all of the things that God has given to us, you are responsible for them. And God someday will gather us all together, however that is, from the sea. And I don't think, nobody avoids this, neither cremation nor burial at sea, nothing. We're going to be gathered together and we're going to be judged according to the works that we do. And you even see this in Matthew, the two judgment days there. There's one, and I think 8 or 9, and then one towards the end of the chapter there. If you notice that God wasn't so concerned with their profession, he was concerned with what they did. And at the I should have wrote down, I was reading through it and I didn't write it down. It said he separated the sheep from the goats, and he said, "Come, ye blessed of my Father." And he called them on, and they were like, "What did we do?" He said, "Well, you fed me, you took care of me. Basically, you served me." That's what they did. And God will judge us by our works. And it's very, very important in this world of deception today. People believe you can profess your way into heaven. And they say, nothing you do matters. And then they say, well, you better be good anyways. Anyhow, I preached about that a couple Sundays ago. But God, you're actually going to stand before God and your works are going to be reviewed. And I don't know how that all will be. But it's going to be an awful time for those whose sins have not gone beforehand, and for those who did not care that God gave them talents and said, use it wisely. And for those who did not care that God offered them forgiveness and they didn't forgive. And many things. God is going to review everything that we did. And I'm not sure if it'll be literally as books here, or this is symbolic. But our works will be reviewed. The way we live, maybe we should just put it this way. The way we live will be reviewed somehow in God's presence. And there's even things alluded to in Scripture to where God's justice will even be revealed to the people, perhaps if we have wronged and some things like that. And I think it shows a little bit who God is somehow through his justice and all of those things. That God takes care of things. It's why we can be non-resistant, is because God will take care of it all in the long run. He will take care of it. He will judge. He will take care of all those things, and they will all be taken care of. So we're all going to give account, and then there's going to be the people whose names are not written in the book of life. And if we go in the previous part of the book, Revelations, it's called the Lamb's Book of Life, I believe, which is Jesus' book of life. It's the life that he promised us all through John. I am the bread of life and the living water, and so many different terms he used. It's in Jesus' book of life, through forgiveness of our sins. Whoever's name isn't found in there is going to be cast out when the accounting is done. Well, there's a more promising chapter yet in Revelations 21. After God is done giving account, he's going to take, if you go down to 4, if you're here in Revelations, verse 4, he's going to take all these people that have been subjected to horrible injustices and all kinds of things. And we don't understand how God can even take away memories. I think it appears to me like somehow you'll have no memory of them. You know, in today's world, you can be actually forgiven. You can actually forgive. God calls us to forgive. But the memories of things that we go through just never go away. In fact, they affect us for the rest of our lives. And especially people who have been horrifically treated, it affects them for the rest of their lives. But somehow in heaven, it seems like the memories are taken away. God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow, nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. And I think this is a promising verse, because there are so many horrible things that go on in the world that were, humanly, they're just unrepairable. But God does repair them, and this is part of this great accounting that will happen at the end of time. Well, let's be ready to meet God. Let's be ready to give an account. He's going to call us into account, just like we do in a very natural way. He's going to call us into account. What have you done with salvation? What have you done with forgiveness of sins? What are you doing with yourself now? Are you serving him? Are you taking the things that he has given to you? Are you taking the gifts and the talents and the money and the circumstances you're born into, and so many other things? And are you using them to further his kingdom and to multiply them? You were given 5, now you have 10. And what are you doing? And someday God's going to call us into account, and he's going to ask us, what have you done? What have you done? And someday he's going to look at the great injustices we have perpetrated to other people, and he's going to say, what have you done? Why did you do this? And someday, we're going to all stand before him at the great white throne. Everybody will. And he's going to open our books. And if we're not in this book of life, then we go into hell, the lake of fire. Or if we're in the book of life, then we go into the place where we shall be with him forever. And all memory of anything bad will be taken away from us.